This week, the Dow Jones added over 540 points, breaking yet another record, while gold and silver posted the best showing in years. Welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. It's just a pleasure to have you back with another Muy Grande-sized episode. Three big guests. We have a triple header this week with a conference call. But first, let's talk about the fourth industrial revolution. That's what the experts are calling it. Artificial intelligence, big data, advanced robotics, 3D manufacturing, of course, the blockchain, and Internet of Things, IoT. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So first we had steam. You'll recall coal was required for locomotives and steam engines. Then it was on to oil, gas-powered engines, and then, of course, electricity along the way with our computer revolution, internet revolution, and now it's the fourth industrial revolution, blockchain, crypto, robotics, and all the rest. How will this new technology impact the world? We're already starting to see lots of positive signs and some negatives. You know, just like with any technology, it can protect us and it can harm us. It really comes down to how the technology is adopted. Joining me in this discussion today, economist Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff from Boston University, tops in the field, tells us why precious metals investors should continue increasing their stockpile. He certainly is. He has gold bars, outlines a lot of interesting ways for retirees to improve their benefits, increase payouts in Social Security by over 70%. We also talk about a fascinating new study that showed that scientists have just uploaded the mind of a small invertebrate into a computer and the robot moves around. This, I think, is probably the moment that many have been speculating for over 30 years, in fact, and here it is. We appear to be on the cusp. And just as people said no one will ever clone human beings or advanced chimpanzees, things like that, well, they've just done that. They've actually cracked the code this month. And so just as they're saying, well, so you uploaded the mind of a worm, so what? Well, 10, 20 years from now, maybe even sooner, who knows the possibilities? Will we be living to infinity? Or will we even want the option? Also, CEO Thomas Coughlin, gold aficionado Andrew Maguire, whistleblower on the silver market, rejoins the show in a big conference call. They talk about a potential new crowdfunding possibility with Allocated Bullion Exchange. And they're hoping to really usher in a whole new monetary system, decentralized and disrupting the central banks. Kinesis is the name of the project, and hopefully they'll have a website up soon. You'll want to listen into all the interesting topicality. Plus, you know, I think one of the more interesting topics this week, it's just amazing to me. I started to crunch the numbers on Interzone. Listeners might remember, and some of my newsletter readers will be aware that I've been investing, pointing out the interesting aspects of Interzone, ticker ITZ. Now, this is a token that is very inexpensive. At least it was when I first pointed it out, around a cent or two. It's now up to 50 cents if you can actually buy it. And I think this is really one of the more compelling stories here. Full disclosure, say I have a sizable position in Interzone, but it's really a fraction, you know, of the piggy bank. What I think is interesting here is I've watched Komodo, which I was suggesting people look into around 60 cents. It's now nearly $7. So a tenfold move there just in recent months. The similarities, you know, they're both basically anonymity coins, but that's where the similarities seem to end. Komodo has like 100 million share float, from what I understand, and Interzone just 2 million. It gets even more interesting. You really can't buy Interzone because the exchanges, there's only one exchange that's open to it, and it's very difficult for most people to use, CoinMarkets. And that's if you can actually even find it for sale. I mean, the last time I saw it, it was really closer to 60, 75 cents, depending on, of course, the Bitcoin price, because that's the differential. I think the really compelling story here, let's compare Komodo and Interzone for a moment. 100 million shares, 60 cents, like Interzone not too long ago, but it has 50 times the float of Interzone, a similar coin, which I think has just as much potential. But let's be honest, Komodo has better anonymity features, and it has a really rock star development team relative to Interzone. For Interzone to trade similarly, given its float and price relative to Komodo, that's about a $180 coin. Let's slice that by a factor of 10 due to the lack of development team. Well, that brings us down to about $18. Again, let's slice it by another factor of 10, simply because institutions can't really invest in it because there's only 2 million shares, 2 million tokens out. We slash it again. That's still 180. So I would argue that this coin is at least off its fair value, minimum fair value, $1.80 to $2. I mean, to me, that's a 4x from here. We've had 10x, really 20x, and I think that it could be another 4 to 10x to come. That's my hope. Lots of provisos in there, no guarantees, not at all a recommendation, just some analysis, something to think about. And so, you know, for our listeners, we are still offering 100 of these tokens for each new 5-year and 10-year subscriber or subscription to the newsletter. And we are still offering our Ledger Bitcoin cold storage wallet. I use one. I recommend everyone use one. Gold Leaf wallets. Highly recommend. Well, we're giving one away to everybody who signs up for an annual subscription. And for 5 and 10-year subscribers, of course, you get the 100 to 300 tokens of Interzone from my wallet I send to you. Plus, I've had a surprising interest for my crowdfunding for the Black Swan Mining Fund. You know, we've had a lot of success there with a test fund, if you will, with a lot of support from... I did spend the week, thank goodness, the actuarial exam out of the way. What a relief. It's like 1,000 tons off the shoulders. I know I have some actuaries who actually listen and have contacted me over the years, so you know what you go through there. But that's over with, thank goodness, out of the way. So I spent the week that I would have been studying for the exam P working on the ERC-20 token. It's completely finished. All the tier structures, all the benefits, bonuses, everything built in. It's really kind of strange because there was probably about 20 contracts written into this token. I'm not like patting myself on the back. I'm patting the developers, you know, Vitalik Buterin and all of his team for coming up with just this astounding platform. Took a lot more work than I anticipated. That took a couple of weeks to get it just right. And then, of course, I spent the last week after that was completed writing up after work what I'm calling a gray paper, or my concept paper, if you will. It's 7 to 10 pages long. I've added several of you to my what I'm calling a gray list, which is just basically if you want to be involved with the pre-ICO, hopefully be launching that soon. I have been in contact and keeping a very close eye on the legal issues here. That's a big question, especially in America. So I've got to watch that closely and have some legal counsel. And anyone who wants to partner, be sure and just let me know. Send me a message at gsart@hughes.net or just sign up for the newsletter and you'll have all the latest information. I keep it updated there regularly, almost daily. We'd like for you to call into our Q&A hotline. I need to get to that soon. 641-715-3900 extension 514049. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. GoldSync.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited yet again over the precious metals sector. On Friday, gold and silver continued their upward trajectory, soaring as the greenback plunged to the lowest levels in years. Gold blasted higher to $13.52, while silver picked up nearly 50 cents, finishing at $17.44 an ounce. The precious metals XAU shares, though, also picked up momentum. Did they? I didn't see that. Black gold added nearly $3, soaring to over 66 per barrel, about a 3-year record, just as we've anticipated, but even faster. I've been calling for 65 to 70, thanks again to tight supply conditions in the U.S., according to the Energy Department's inventory numbers. Plus, Bitcoin, basically break even if you look at it off 6%. It sneezes and moves 6%, finished at about $16.46. Well, 2017 was the year for the precious metals, up nearly 14%, according to the World Gold Council, the best year since 2010, outperforming virtually all asset classes other than U.S. equities. Contributing to the big stellar moves, well, the U.S. dollar slump plus momentum in the equities markets. Gold ETF saw $8.2 billion in inflows last year. The World Gold Council went on to say that as our incomes increase, demand for gold jewelry and gold technologies increases. Consumer demand very solid in the U.S., but particularly in India and China. the top consumers. China's New Year celebrations, another seasonal positive for the yellow metal. Money managers are also interested in gold. They've doubled their bullish bets on the COMEX exchange in recent months. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, the Fed funds futures suggest we'll have a rate hike not next week, which is our next FOMC, but in March. Still, the technical picture is improving as we see those bullish head and shoulders patterns attempt to break out and then pull back. And we're still, I think, waiting for that big moment, but we've certainly seen some positive signs already this year. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange, yet again from horizon to horizon, as the U.S. economy leads the world forward, thanks in no small part to the slumping greenback. As many investors realize, a weak dollar, of course, improves our relative trade advantage with the rest of the world, simply because our products become less expensive relative to many of our trading partners. So, put simply, people buy American goods. The news sent the Dow to 26,600 on Tuesday for the first time, of course, ever. It picked up 544 for the week at 26,071. And the S&P picked up an astounding 63, closing at 2872. And the NASDAQ added 170, ending at 7506. All three indices picked up roughly 2%. And the big narrative pushing stocks higher, news from the World Economic Forum in Davos that our Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, said a weak dollar is good for our trade. And for the reasons I think I've already outlined, most investors are now expecting the Federal Reserve to raise rates three times this year, although I think that's very, very unlikely. I do think we'll see a rate hike, as I mentioned, in March and maybe one more by the end of the year. That's what the Fed funds futures are currently telegraphing. Bottom line on U.S. shares, the FOMC meeting, a non-event next week. I do see a move, though, up to 150 to 175 basis points in March. Plus, the 7 indicator greed to fear index is still very greedy, but you know, there's still room on the upside, which is hard to believe. This has gone into what Jim Sinclair, one of our favorites here, likes to call a ram's horn move, which is likely approaching the peak, at least in the near term. So I wouldn't be chasing equities at this point. This looks frothy. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek with our big conference call and Professor Kotlikoff. It's a pleasure to welcome back my featured guest, professor of economics at Boston University, as well as author of The Inform Act and Clash of the Generations, Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security. Welcome back, professor.
Thanks so much.
You know, you've penned some interesting articles recently, particularly at Forbes. You have a lot of concern in recent years that our Social Security system, people aren't making the most of it.
We really have to worry about living to our maximum age of life, because we might. I have a 98-year-old mom who's going strong. We're likely to have 3 million or so centenarians, people over 100, by the middle of the century. So all of us have to worry about the financial downside of old age. And the downside of old age, financially speaking, is not dying, it's living. Because as long as you continue to live, you have to keep paying for yourself. So with Social Security, if you wait till 70 to take the retirement benefit, you can get a 76% higher check every month than if you take your benefit early at 62. That's the earliest age you can start at. Social Security has an enormous return from patients in terms of maximizing your lifetime benefits. Can't count on dying on time is the point. Social Security, by waiting, you're in effect buying insurance that you will make it to 100 and that you will need extra money, and you'll have that extra money because you waited till 70, so you will have given up something, 8 years of benefits, to get something that will pay off in that risky situation where you keep living. So I have a software company on the side. You know, I'm an economics professor at Boston University, but we have a software program. It's called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, and that program sells for $40, and anybody can use it. And it will instantly tell you exactly what to do to maximize your lifetime benefits. So there is a way for people to get the right answer here. They just can't get it from Social Security itself because those folks are focused on trying to get you to retire and take your benefit early because I'm not sure why. I think they just have a misconception at Social Security about how people should be thinking about this issue of longevity risk. And then the financial industry is interested in having you take your money early so they can manage it. They want you to take your benefits right away and hand them over to those folks who are in the financial industry so that they can put it to work, so to speak. And that means put it in very risky securities in general and charging high fees. And so Social Security is not only a great insurance mechanism, but it's also safe against inflation because it's indexed for inflation, protected against inflation. So nobody should be taking their benefits early if they can, unless that's the optimal thing to do. They might have special circumstances. They may have just children benefits, disabled child benefits to be had, or spousal child benefits that they can only collect if they take their benefits early. So there are some reasons which our software picks up for moving early, but in general, it's not what our software will recommend. But you'll be able to see what the advantage and disadvantage of moving early versus late is in the program.
Gone, I guess, are the days of striving to become an octogenarian. This is maybe a bit off topic, but an interesting article on Sputnik yesterday showed that scientists had just uploaded the mind of an invertebrate into a robot, and the robot was wiggling around the room. When these things happen on a micro scale, usually 10 or 20 years down the road, we find it, kind of a more plausible situation. So maybe even 100 years, we might go to infinity. Another thing to start thinking about, maybe cryptocurrencies would be the solution for that, but this really isn't the venue for that topic. Tell us other projects you're working on right now.
I just did a lot of work on the tax reform, studying its impact on the economy. I think it'll probably increase output by about 4%, a one-time increase. It may take some years for that 4%, for our GDP to be 4% higher. And also, I think wages will be about 5% higher, again, a one-time impact. So this tax reform is likely to have small positive effects on the economy. It's also going to, I think, pay for itself in the sense that debt to GDP will not be significantly higher or really any higher after these feedback effects occur. But the tax reform is not something that can really explain the incredible increase in the stock market over the last year and since President Trump's election. So I think that your focus is on alternative investments, and I think people need to be wary of investing in the market if there's no fundamentals here to the stock market to support it. I think there's some belief that there's been an enormous handout to corporations from this tax reform. And if you look even, forget my simulation analysis and just look at the Joint Committee on Taxation's estimates, there's not a particularly large tax cut over the next 10 years for corporate America when you really look at the numbers carefully. So you can't really justify it. So that's one, kind of comment about some of my work that I'm doing. I think the tax reform is like a B minus. It's not a D tax reform, but it's not what I would have proposed or other economists that I know would have pushed for. The other point to make about it is that it's not likely to dramatically change the distribution of resources in the country. I don't think it's a pure giveaway to the rich by any means. I've also been looking at that issue. So I think there's been a lot of kind of misstatements about this reform. A lot of people saying it's going to be the second coming and other people saying it's redistribution to his rich friends. I don't think either of those statements are true.
can you address the growing disparity between extremely affluent and the rest of the United States? I mean, according to several recent documented studies, over half of the United States has less than $500 in savings for emergencies, a health issue to perhaps auto repair, or even, you know, a job loss, dislocations, things of that nature. It's interesting because most of our listeners today are quite well off, but, you know, even they will be impacted when maybe half of their neighbors suddenly find themselves maybe in a very stressful situation.
Yeah, it's definitely the case. You have a lot of people without financial wealth or without much financial wealth. On the other hand, if we just look at financial wealth as a measure of inequality in the country, we come to the conclusion that it's absolutely horrendous. If you take a broader perspective, people go to my website, kotlikoff.net, find an article, post on their article, start that U.S. inequality. It's looking at inequality the way economics says to look at it, which is to look at the inequality in spending that people get to do, not just in the current year, but over their lifetime, and compare that with other people in their cohort, in their same age group, who are rich versus poor. So let's ask what share, for example, do the top 1% of 40-year-olds with the most resources, the top 1% that account for the top 1% of resources, what do they own in terms of the cohort's wealth? They own about 22% of that cohort's wealth. What do they get to spend? It's more like around 12% of the cohort's wealth spending. So spending is much more equally distributed than is financial wealth. And the reason is that there's other components of resources here, not just your financial wealth, but also your human wealth, your current and future labor income. That's a resource. Your future Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits and other government benefits are a resource. And then you have to pay, you have negative resources like taxes, that Medicare Part B premiums. And the rich have disproportionately high negative resources. They have to pay disproportionately more taxes than the poor. I'm not saying that spending is equally distributed in our country, that we don't have massive inequality in spending. What I'm saying is that if you look at spending inequality, it's dramatically lower than wealth inequality. So, and we haven't done an analysis through time of how spending inequality has changed. So we don't know yet, to tell you the truth, whether inequality has been getting worse or better through time. What I guess I'm saying is that these studies that you're referencing are kind of partial analysis. They're looking at either wealth or labor income inequality, but they're not putting the whole picture together. It comes down to who gets to consume what. We have to look within an age group, because comparing somebody, we have to look within an age group, like among 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds, and then ask, do the rich within that age group get to spend, how much do they get to spend versus the poor? It's very unequal, but it's not as unequal as wealth.
No, it's an interesting point. It's almost Kafka-esque. My favorite short story of his, In the Penal Colony, you know, an outsider comes to the country and sees the amazing things that are occurring. It's just distressing. You may have read that report from the UN in the past week or so, where they were just trying to come to terms with how the U.S., the world's most wealthy nation, also has perhaps the highest discrepancy between the haves and have-nots. This obviously will be a huge issue.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you know, if you ask, my sense is that things are getting more unequal, but we haven't done a careful study looking at how spending inequality has changed. You know, if you look at 40-year-olds today versus 20 years ago, to the top 1%, does their share of spending look much higher today than it did 20 years ago? You have a sense when you look at the economy just on a physical basis and see robots replacing people and so many different types of jobs. I drove a Tesla the other day just for the fun of it, and the thing that's driving me, you know, switching lanes for me, braking for me, I could have taken a nap while it was driving. Put it on cruise control, and you know, it's doing its thing. So we're going to have 7% of the workforce is in transportation. A good chunk of those people could be quickly replaced by driverless trucks and taxi cabs, and if all we'll have to do is use our cell phone to call a car, so we won't need our own car, some car to come pick us up, and that's going to have an impact on automobile production. So the entire economy is being wrenched around by automation. Any competitive edge that the U.S. had in the past is threatened in the future, including my job as a professor, because with video conferencing you can have, or online education, you can have just one great professor teach all the courses around the country, well, around the world, actually.
As you mentioned, you know, Uber and some of these other alternative taxi services are buying fleets of automated cars in certain areas, test areas. That's one example. Of course, Amazon now has nearly fully automated real brick-and-mortar stores. Of course, we've all been using checkout, I'm sure, grocery counters from time to time. Then, of course, the ATM, the original example, the ATM machine, is now virtually a relic of the past. And also, restaurants now have automated food delivery and now fully automated and solar-powered. I mean, so you're right. We're entering a great time of disruption and dislocation. The real issue for the everyday middle class homme moyen on the ground, pounding the pavement, it comes down to jobs. Okay, jobs and pay. And I think a lot of times our officials and policymakers lose sight of this. Can we revitalize the job market, and how can we do that?
Well, we have to start really with our education system, and it needs to be a national education system, not a state and local, especially a local education system where, you know, some places are better funded than others and the curriculum's different. And I think we need to bring technology in to bear to kind of fight technology. We need to have kids sitting in pods and learning on their own so they're not disrupted by other kids in the classroom. So I would say that half of each day's classes should be online instruction. If we're talking about, you know, depending on the grade level, but certainly high school and probably junior high school, maybe even fifth and sixth grade as well. We just need to have the kids be able to learn without being disrupted by other kids, because that's what's going on in a lot of classrooms throughout the country. Lower the effective class size, and technology where you have a kid in a pod and they're learning with a screen and a computer at their own pace, and the curriculum is presented that's working for them. If they're teaching, if they're not catching on based on the testing, again, online testing of what they're being presented, then it can be presented a different way. So we need to get our kids really up to snuff in terms of preparedness for dealing with this ever-changing economy, and to learn that we just cannot be hoping to be successful when 70% of our kids don't finish a four-year college, which is what we're talking about right now in the U.S. So we have to get our kids up to the point of college in a really good, you know, position to go to college and to realize what the value of education is. Any profession these days is subject to being replaced. Any job.
You know, now actuaries are even being replaced in Japan. DeepMind, I think it is, one of IBM's latest pseudo-artificial intelligence, just replaced something like 30 extremely high-paying jobs, customer service jobs. I'd certainly like your thoughts on the domestic economy and, you know, for our investors here today, some insights on perhaps what asset classes are more appealing in 2018.
So I think the U.S. economy is moving along. I think we have an economy that gets very excited, and everybody thinks it's kind of gets on the same bandwagon. And right now the bandwagon is that times are good and that we have full employment and that the outlook is bright and the business and consumers are confident. And that's great. And that's telling employers that if companies that if they produce more output, there'll be somebody there to buy it. So that encourages them to employ more people. And that may end up producing higher wages, which we desperately could use. We haven't seen real wage increases for the median worker. Median wages haven't risen very much for a very, very long time. The downside of this is that we have what appears to be a stock market bubble. Housing prices are probably also far beyond what in a lot of places what they should be. So we're kind of seeing some of the conditions we saw in 2000 and leading up to the Great Recession in 2008, we don't know how leveraged the banking system is at this point. I know the Federal Reserve does their studies, but when push comes to shove, even if you have a a lot of kind of safe assets in your bank and you haven't borrowed all that much, you can still go under. The other banks decide that you're, that everybody else is going to stop funding you. They're going to stop funding you because they don't want to be the only one to do it. And that's really what we saw in 2008, a defunding crisis, not a conventional 19th century run on the bank or Great Depression run, run on the bank like you saw in It's a Wonderful Life, that movie. That wasn't what happened. It was the banks losing confidence in the other banks. So we still have a fragile financial system given the way that we've allowed leverage to be continued in the system, and opacity so that nobody really knows for sure what these banks have in assets and owe in liabilities. So, you know, we never really fixed the banking system the right way. I wrote a book called Jimmy Stewart is Dead, referencing the It's a Wonderful Life movie. Your listeners may be interested in reading about my views. I get that book on Amazon, wherever. Local bookstore would be better. But anyway, so I see that there's risks out there, and I think that protecting oneself, gold at this point may be a good alternative investment. I think it's always been a good thing to have in your portfolio. I have a share of my portfolio in gold bars. Maybe increasing that share would be a good idea at this point, given how high the market is. And we've seen it drop 60% in the Great Recession. The NASDAQ group dropped, I think the stock market dropped 50% in 2000 and between 2000 and 2002. So the correction is going to come at some point, and it could be very big. So having some downside protection in the form of gold should be useful.
Would you find allocating a small modicum into a bearish equities fund a prudent hedging technique?
Yeah, I got going more, let's say, more dividend yielding stocks. That's something I've done in recent days, trying to find equity investments that are not necessarily correlated or not as correlated with the market is also a good idea. You know, something that people are going to need when things start to fall, they start to fall, not just in the U.S., but overseas. I had invested in equities, overseas equities, prior to 2008 because I thought there would be a good hedge for the U.S. market dropping, but foreign stocks dropped even more than the U.S. stocks. So we're talking about, for example, like Canadian stocks. I think they dropped by a bigger percentage than U.S. stocks, even though Canada didn't have any financial crisis. People might think about it as I'm very adverse to investing in long-term bonds because unless they're inflation indexed, there are treasury inflation index bonds that are very safe, and that's you buy long-term treasury inflation index bonds, you just hold them till they mature. You're going to get exactly the real return, the real coupon payment that they offer, and not have to worry about any price fluctuations along the way. If you buy nominal bonds, just the regular 30-year treasury, that could drop dramatically if we have inflation, if interest rates go up, and if we have, and they will go up if inflation takes off, which could happen as well, partly because the economy is revving up and partly because the government is broke and may, I think, start printing money over time to pay for its bills, as other governments have that have been bankrupt, and our country is definitely bankrupt if you look at the long-term picture. I would stay away from nominal bonds in our country, but there may be good nominal bonds to buy in New Zealand or Australia or Canada or Chile, in countries that have reliable, responsible fiscal policies where payoff from these bonds is a pretty sure thing, and the government's not likely to have to print money to pay for their bills.
You suggested Treasury inflation protection, and of course there's an ETF now for folks who maybe don't have the resources to participate in the bond market. I mean, that's just ticker TIP, I believe. It's been a while since I checked it.
The thing about the ETFs is that they're floating through. It's not like a buy and hold strategy. If you buy a mutual fund or an index fund of inflation index bonds, the return is going to vary just holding that ETF. If the composition of it is changing through time to maintain a weighting, you're not going to get the same for sure a real coupon payment every year that you get from directly buying a treasury bond, an inflation index treasury bond, a TIP, treasury inflation protected security, a TIPS bond from, and you can do that directly from the treasury. So, and I think they may have bonds would sell for just $1,000. I believe that you can buy a $1,000 bond. So I think you can just do it from treasurydirect.gov. So that's another way to go for a lot of people. If they have some money outside of their retirement accounts, or if their retirement account has been converted into a rollover IRA, then they can set up a brokerage account and invest directly in these long-term bonds.
Very good. And as we wrap up, maybe direct people to any current promotions or articles, things that you'd like for them to review.
People go to my website, kotlikoff.net. They can see everything I've been writing for the general public, and also academic articles that are written for people to be able to read, as well as economists. So a software company called economicsecurityplanning.com. If you go to economicsecurityplanning.com, you can see all the different software programs that my company has. We have a lifetime financial planning tool called Maxify Planner that figures out how much you can spend on an ongoing basis without running out, and also figures out internally how to raise it. So it's very unlike any other software program out there that does planning. It's a fabulous tool. And this MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com program is there. And we also have a program called AnalyzeMyDivorceSettlement.com for people that are getting divorced and want to see how they're fare under any proposed divorce settlement. Use it to propose their own settlement. Another great tool. So I would encourage people to take a look at economicsecurityplanning.com.
Very good. We'll have the links up there. And Professor Kotlikoff, continued success in 2018.
You too. Thanks so much.
All right, it's just a real pleasure to have an exclusive event today. This is really exciting because the crypto world, everyone knows, is the future. It's unfolding in real time. People are adopting it at their own pace. We have a potentially disruptive team joining me today. Andrew McGuire of Andrew McGuire Gold Trading, 40 years gold market veteran here, plus whistleblower, as all of our listeners know, and his debut here, CEO Tom Glaughlin. Just a pleasure to have everybody join us today in this conference call on what I think sounds like a very unique opportunity in the crypto space. Welcome, Andrew and Tom.
Thank you very much.
Nice to be with you, Chris. I've obviously been on your show before. I consider Tom like a brother. This is a man I met probably close to 6 years ago. In fact, it was shortly after I walked out of the Department of Justice in Washington with my lawyers, with something ringing in my ear, which was basically after providing 88 examples of LIBOR-style manipulation directly pointing to the bullion banks. What was ringing in my ears was, yep, but what about the economic consequences? So really, it said to me, we have to do this ourselves. We have to find a physical market solution, and that would do the job for us. So, you know, really, like, I'm going to introduce Tom in a second, but we've just returned from the St. Moritz Crypto Finance Conference, and I think people will have seen that was reported by Reuters. But notably, it excluded something very, very important, and that is massive excitement surrounding the announcement of our new game-changing cryptocurrency called Kinesis. And the conference was actually attended by several members of the Four Billionaire List, and really the largest global money managers in the world. Now, what I will say to you right away is when they heard what Tom had to say, they expressed immediate interest in purchasing the entire ICO offering. Tom, I'm going to let you speak.
Yes, and for those who don't know me, yes, I'm the CEO of Allocated Bullion Exchange, which is a spot physical exchange for precious metals, namely gold, silver, and platinum. We have different trading, settlement, and delivery locations spread around the world. Actually, Allocated Bullion Exchange has got a lot coming up this year in the sense that we'll be rolling out with a very large partnership with Deutsche Börse to really take on and infiltrate the London trade, but not unallocated trade. This is allocated and segregated trade through our systems, and it's going to be very exciting. We'll be going out through 23 clearing banks as opposed to the 5-odd clearing banks with the London Precious Metals Clearing Limited. And we continue to do game-changing deals all over the place, working with various different exchanges as well, all combining our powers together to really make a difference as far as the global physical precious metal industry goes. So, but there's one very special thing that we've been working on for a while, and this is, well, the first time publicly online that we've disclosed this. We just announced it last Thursday here at the St. Moritz Conference, and that's the launch of a very special currency. Well, it's actually going to be a suite of currencies, and really what it is, it's an entirely new monetary system. And what I will say, firstly, whether you like cryptocurrencies or not, what cryptocurrencies has brought is a level of technology which has enabled us all to be creative, and it really also, through the blockchain and distributed ledger and the decentralization that has enabled, that has the cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology has enabled around the world, it enables us to be creative, and it enables the people to have a say and also to have power. But so we've taken the, I guess, the ability of this technology and applied some very, very special properties to it. So firstly, we've taken the greatest store of value in the world, and that's gold. We've also done it for silver as well, and of course gold is the undisputed champion as the greatest store of value around the world, and as I guess the greatest currency chosen by the universe and created by the universe. Its rarity is not chosen by people, it's chosen by the universe. It's created by a very rare cosmic event that actually we only witnessed. This is some trivia for you. We only witnessed on the 17th of October, two neutron stars colliding. That's what actually creates gold. First time humankind has ever witnessed it. So it's the universe that obviously controls the rarity of it. And of course, as your listeners would know, you know, human civilization has valued it as a store of value and as a currency for many thousands of years, the undisputed champion of holding its value and as a store of value. But what we've done is, for the first time, obviously, in human history, is we've attached a yield. In addition to that, made it a phenomenal medium of exchange. In that sense, you've got the store of value. You've got a very attractive, I call it kinetically charged yield, which I'll delve into that later, and then made it also a highly efficient medium of exchange. So it's very easy to basically transact. Not only is it very easy to transact in it, we highly incentivize people to transact in it. And I'll delve into this because it's actually very, very important. And some of your, you know, viewers might know of different platforms out there that enable users to basically use gold as a currency or for payments and the like. But the thing is, people who value gold, they want to hoard it. They want to store it. They don't want to use it for payments. They want to use what they value less, the currencies that they value less, for payment. Gresham's law of money. So bad money drives out good. So if I value gold, I want to hoard it as much as what I can, and I want to use fiat currency for payments. We actually defeat that whole model. And how we defeat that model is by highly incentivizing people to actually use it as a currency. And we've got this multifaceted yield system. There's four different yields that are attached to this money, and one of them is for coin minters. So this is, it's actually an active yield rather than just a passive yield. So a passive yield would be, you know, you put your money in the bank, so you basically give your money to the bank, deposit it in, and they give you an interest rate, which is negligible at the moment. That's a passive yield. We've got that as well, which is much more attractive than what a bank can pay. But we've also got a highly attractive active yield. And for investors who want to get involved with this, what they can do is actually mint our coins. So they invest in our wholesale market, which is technology run by ABX. So tried and tested, run, it's institutional grades, basically like the NYSE or the NASDAQ of the precious metals. And then what they do is emit it into the blockchain system. And then from there, they receive, once they send or spend it, so obviously they're incentivized to send or spend it, then once they send or spend it, then they'll receive a yield on those coins forever. So as those coins circulate through the system, changing from one person to the next, they actually receive a portion of the transaction fees.
Is this an ERC-20 token by chance?
No, that's the Ethereum network isn't efficient enough for us. Brought in the top-of-the-line consultants that we're still working with in building all of this out. But the Ethereum network just does not have the efficiency to deal with what we're dealing with here. And I can delve into this later because we're interfacing into postal systems around the world and the like. And there's millions and millions of transactions that have been going through this thing every day. So this needs to have top shelf. See, and the Ethereum blockchain network just doesn't have that capacity at this point.
It sounds like that would require a new blockchain. If you all do run into a snag, we have a platform that's an instantaneous, only takes an afternoon to code up. You can have different tiers to issue out the tokens, dividend-like payments. So, I mean, if you all are interested at all, we have that platform here. It actually creates a working prototype where you can interact with it in real time as though it were the real token itself, but it's on the test network. This might be a plausible alternative to actually having to create or partner with an entirely new blockchain.
Our structure is we have a wholesale market, and then that wholesale market actually connects up to the blockchain. The wholesale market is not in the blockchain. It's a centrally cleared market, which is will shortly be interfaced into Deutsche Börse, along with our exchange, the ABX exchange, and all our members. We've already got a very strong distribution network. So through Deutsche Börse, we go out to 450 institutional members all around the world. They can plug into the system. But what actually happens is there's this wholesale market where the coins will be trading in like grouped lot sizes, and then with the click of a button, you can actually bring it into the blockchain network. We're going to have our initial blockchain network, but it's all been designed to actually be able to choose which blockchain network you want to take it into, effectively. So over time, we'll build out optionality there. So, yes, we will be able to do it for...
I know we've got a lot of people in the crowd that are involved with gold money. Andrew McGuire on the line here with us today. He will know James Turk, longtime friend of the show here. Can you help us to understand how your Kinesis, how it's decentralized, maybe relative to the way that gold money's crypto system is more centralized?
So, obviously, gold money is a proprietary type platform in the sense that you get into the gold money ecosystem, you're in the gold money ecosystem, whereas we're releasing a cryptocurrency that will be decentralized. There's obviously a degree of centralization required, as if you hold any physical asset, it needs to be stored in a central location. But the tokens will actually trade and I guess pass from peer-to-peer on a cryptocurrency. With like digital signatures attached that can be divided down and tracked throughout a distributed ledger that can be applied up against different cryptocurrency exchanges that can go out, you know, be held in cold storage, it trades on a decentralized basis. Of course, the metal is held in a centralized location. It's the only way to do it, but, The currency still allocates the title of the metal downstream to the ultimate bit of beneficial owner. But then it attaches this yield system on top of it. So it operates like a warehouse receipt in the sense that it's a document of title, but then on top of that is a multifaceted yield system which promotes the currency to actually be used as a currency. We've chosen the greatest store of value of all time and then really worked on improving it as a medium of exchange. And then basically kinetically charged it with this yield system that highly incentivizes the actual utilization of the currency.
I know listeners will be wondering, how does this value proposition tie in with the currency? This has been an issue that's plagued the crypto space, you know, the domain. And we're waiting for a really solid way to tie the digital to the physical metal, to the bullion, just how the token holder can feel safe, can feel secure that when I purchase ABC token on an exchange, off an exchange, maybe even peer-to-peer, how can I feel confident that Kinesis can deliver the bullion backing? Tell us your proposition, please.
Firstly, the entity that will be managing the physical side of Kinesis, so the physical handling and the physical storage, is ABX, Allocated Bullion Exchange. This is an established entity. I'm not sure whether your listeners have heard of it before, but ABX operates, connects with some of the largest physical traders on planet Earth. In addition to that, we have partnerships with some of the largest exchanges on Earth, like Deutsche Börse, and we're working with a number of others as well, which we'll have news around over the coming months. ABX will be managing everything. We've never had any glitch as far as physical delivery or anything on the physical handling side. Yeah, the utilization of ABX's mechanics, rules, facilities is what brings, I would say, trust and quality assurance to the Kinesis, on the physical precious metal side of things.
Andrew, maybe you'd like to jump in here?
Yeah, so Chris, so essentially what gets right back to where I started at the beginning, what ABX has created a global vaults in the most liquid parts of the world that are fully independent of the legacy system and are fully allocated, as Tom has started up by saying, and it's an electronic allocated fully physical exchange. So as far as the currency is concerned, the Kinesis currency is concerned, as I say, every single ounce of gold and silver running through this system is backed by and lives inside the ABX exchange. It is still owned. It is owned by the person who buys it. It is allocated to the person that buys it. Whether this is a large hedge fund, and what is exciting about this is that we, under an NDA, Tom was mentioning there are a couple of issues we can't mention it yet, but we've been working under an NDA with some of the very largest global money managers who have large holdings of gold and silver, looked at this and said, hang on, my gold can stay in my possession to yield or no yield. It's as simple as that. Now, I can sit on my bullion. It stays in my name. I have full control of it, withdraw it, sell it, buy it, and do anything I want with it. But if I choose to emit it into the Kinesis exchange, it still stays in my name. It still has not moved. The physical bullion is still fully in my possession. But I now can create a yield on this. And of course, yeah. This is the beauty of the system. It is so institutional, and there isn't a hedge fund manager or a money manager out there that I have spoken to under an NDA.
You've made a great case for it, but here's the big question. Is it issued in terms of the underlying cryptocurrency, or is it a precious metals yield? Is it a fiat yield? Because I know listeners are going to be asking that.
Yeah, it's issued in the underlying currency. There's four different kinds of yields. One is that active yield I spoke to you about, which really incentivizes the actual movement of the money or velocity of the money and utilizing it as money. And that's for people who want to be active with it. Basically, it's a circulation of capital. So you bring your money into the system. You can buy, say, Kinesis coins with it or Kinesis currency with it. You then emit it into the blockchain. You then send it to someone, or you spend it. Initially, at least, if you just sell it, then you won't be eligible for it, because we have to bring our big market makers that sit in our system into the system, and they're just going to be buying back all the time if people are selling. This is a big thing. Like, we're bringing massive amounts of liquidity into the blockchain through these market makers. Because gold's an established market. And we have market makers who sit on either side of the market with billions of dollars. So an institutional trader or even a retail trader can buy and sell in our system instantly. And so the more revolutions you do to your capital, you send or spend it, then you bring it back around, you can do the same thing. And you keep on earning a yield, like basically a share of the transaction fees of those coins for the life of those coins as they travel through the system. The more revolutions you do of your capital, the more money you have out there working for you. So it incentivizes the currency to actually be used as a currency. And then we also have a passive yield as well. So if you just want to be a passive holder and hold on to your currency, you can receive fantastic yields. Like our yield estimates start at around 8.5%, and they can go up to very, very high based upon the velocity of the currency, even up to 50%. A passive yield system, then what you actually do is you compete with every single investment asset on planet Earth, because at the end of the day, whether it be a retail investor or an institutional investor, we're all evaluating investments based upon the return and also based upon the risk. The thing is, with when you back something with gold, you can somewhat define the risk. We've got an established market, right? It's not a brand new cryptocurrency where we don't really know what's going to happen, or we can't really assign a value to it because it has no intrinsic value and it has no definable return. Whereas what we're doing here by intrinsically backing this currency by gold and silver, we have a pre-established market with definable risk, and then you attach a yield to it, and that also produces definable value and definable return. So you end up with a product where you've got very definable risk to return metrics, and then we open up and we can infiltrate certainly the gold and silver markets, the cryptocurrency markets, the fiat currency markets, and every other investment asset market on planet Earth, like whether it be stock market, whether it be rental property, basically anything that has value and produces a return, then we start becoming comparable to them. So this is where we're different to any other cryptocurrency, in the sense that, and I think one reason for the volatility in cryptocurrencies is no one really knows the value of these things. They're valued to the extent of the solution that they provide, like decentralized peer-to-peer transfers and this and that. But each cryptocurrency is getting diluted over time by competition. A lot of them don't have a yield associated with it. So this is where we're very different and very special. We've got both. And we can go out to both the institutional market and retail market with a very special product. And certainly, you know, initially, we've put together basically an investor consortium to help us bring together, because we realized how special this thing was, and we weren't going to go out with sort of some, you know, bulletproof ultimately. And so we've got an investor consortium together. Our ICO for our currencies that will do, I think I mentioned at the beginning, we estimate it at this time to be, our interest to be around $2 billion, and that's obviously only going to grow. So if you look at the largest ICOs, they're a bit over $200 million. So we're looking at a quantum of 10 already. So, and like I said, we infiltrate the gold and silver markets, we infiltrate the cryptocurrency markets, we infiltrate the fiat currency markets. Hey, I'm in Switzerland at the moment. It's negative 0.75% interest rates here. And, you know, if you look through Europe, they've got bail-in provisions. They're taking away depositors' insurance. Basically, holding money with the bank doesn't seem like a very good deal at the moment. The banks take money from you and you got all the counterparty risk with the banks. So present a solution whereby it's allocated title in the ultimate beneficial owner's name, and you can actually make money out of it, either actively or passively, depending where your preference lies. And it's fair, and it's honest, and it's a system of shared wealth. We just think we're a much superior alternative to what's currently out there. You know, we've been very discreetly going, finding all the support. Andy and I have been traveling around the world putting this together. We decided, well, we're at the point now where we can disclose what we're doing and start making it a public thing. Andy said that you're the perfect place to actually start this.
You're bringing two wonderful worlds together, really the best of both worlds. We have the intrinsic value, the tangible asset value, real sound money on one side of the spectrum. Then we flash over to the other side, the neutron star collision, the supernova. You're really grafting that together, you know, with the crypto side, the digital, the instantaneous transaction for good measure, the blockchain aspect, which brings transparency into this giant equation. But I do have some questions for you, because I know the listeners are going to be interested about the Sharia aspects. There's a huge market, hundreds of millions of people out there who belong to the Islamic faith. And of course, the interest there is the usury aspects of fiat money and gold. And it's been a big problem for a long time. It sounds like you may have a solution here for large Islamic institutions, as well as even, I understand, a central bank.
Yes, certainly. And yes, we are Sharia compliant. So, of course, as most people would know, anything that is any money that is debt-based and interest-bearing based upon debt is not Sharia compliant. Bank deposits producing a yield which are interest-bearing, that's not a Sharia compliant product. Whereas what we have is a yield based upon actual real economic activity. So, and that is a sharing of the transaction fees of the system. In that sense, we are actually Sharia compliant, and we're not a debt-based money, debt-based currency, because we're actually intrinsically backed, or actually directly allocated by gold and silver. So yes, we're Sharia compliant. In addition to that, well, we've actually done a deal with the largest Islamic organization in the world. They're NU, based out of Indonesia, with around 100 million members. Like I said at the beginning, like, our distribution network is phenomenal. Just that one integration alone is integration into 100 million members. We just released today collaboration with the Indonesian Post Office as well, called PT POS. Just like many other postal systems around the world, act as agents for the like of Western Union and MoneyGram. Western Union, MoneyGram, you know, the fees that they charge are extraordinary, between, you know, 10 and 25%. And these are countries that, I mean, in the case of Indonesia, 66% of the population is either unbanked or underbanked. And a lot of people are not using bank accounts. And there's a lot of migrant workers working in places like the Middle East, etc., and just sending their small pay packets back to their family via Western Union, and then getting charged 25% along the way. So a lot of these postal systems, and there's a lot of things going on at the moment. We're working with the Indonesian Post Office and bringing many other postal systems together. They're frustrated with this. They're frustrated in acting as agents for the likes of Western Union, and Western Union charging billions of dollars in fees every year. They think that they can do it a lot more efficiently. That's really what blockchain and distributed ledger technology has enabled. And this is like where the revolution is underway. You just can't stand in the way of this, because it's happening, and it's just going to keep on becoming more and more efficient at the forefront of this. And yes, we're disrupting a lot of large, powerful organizations along the way, but they really need to be disrupted.
Chris, I was just going to say, I mean, you've got a very sophisticated listener base there, who understand the gold market, the problems in the paper market, you know, the paper market tail wagging the physical market dog. This goes right back to the beginning. This currency Tom's just describing, it doesn't launch as a new currency. This will have billions of dollars of liquidity behind it day one. Got to remember, this is simple. Once each ounce traded is 100% backed by gold and silver, and the bottom-up demand cannot be fought by the paper market, because we're not talking about going in and saying, I want 50 tons of silver, which you might not get. This is talking about millions and millions of microtransactions coming up from the bottom up. Now, every aspect of this currency meets all KYC requirements, the dots and crosses the T's. This is enormous fresh bullion demand.
Andrew, for our listeners, the KYC, that's know your customer, and we want to make sure this is anti-laundering so that everyone is above board. Regulators are happy with the currency.
Correct, exactly. And we're just trying to give it an impact for your clients can make do their own sums here. They understand the frustration of the paper market. But just imagine this enormous fresh bullion demand flowing in, even just from what we announced today, which is the Asian Post offices, let alone how much of the $800 billion unbacked volatile cryptocurrency market will want to convert to a currency that has an intrinsic value and also returns them a yield. Now, this gold and silver bullion buying is going to be conducted through a very liquid, established ABX vaulting network and exchange, and it's going to backwash into the LBMA paper market, forcing the offer to rise. I can't put it any more simply than that. This is a game changer.
It's a paradigm shifter, and I can see it. I'm starting to, you know, see the forest for the trees, because what you're doing is you're bringing transparency, not just liquidity, but transparency to an opaque market. 100-to-1, 50-to-1, who knows how much naked shorts and leverage has been shifted against the physical market in the terms of paper. We've been talking about this with GATA folks, Bill Murphy and Chris Powell and all the rest, for over a decade now. What we hope we're hearing today is Kinesis will be, you know, that flashpoint, that tipping point that finally reveals the cracks in the foundation of the manipulation.
We have absolutely no doubt that we have absolutely no doubt that that will be the case. For the first time in history, we're attaching a yield to gold, and it's a highly attractive yield, which then sucks in capital, attracts capital from all kinds of asset markets and all kinds of currency markets. And when you look at interest rates around the world for other fiat currency markets, you can't really get excited about their returns, but you can get very excited about our returns. Ultimately, capital is mobile in the world, and capital is seeking return and passive return. That's the difference. That's the difference between us and any other cryptocurrency, and also that'll be the difference between us of any currency. Yield, and that's really the sexy nature of all this. And that's what attracts smart money and big money. We've already got billions of dollars committed, but many more billions will be committed, which will obviously squeeze the physical markets because we're back one for one. It will drain physical metal out of the London vaults, which, hey, look, if you're an institutional silver buyer, I can tell you now that you can't get old bars. You can't get historic bars. They're all got significant delays attached to them. They're either 2017 minted or 2018 minted. Now they would only be 2018 minted. They're minting them as they go. So the silver market's already basically run out, and the gold market's running out of London as well. The gold pool is almost run out of London. So the game's almost up. Aside from this currency with a yield on it, we've got a very special product designed to completely break the back of this paper market. This thing is so lethal. I can't even disclose it at this point in time, but there will come a time in the not too distant future where I will be in a position to better disclose it. And for your loyal listeners out there, we can provide a mechanism to position themselves into it. Basically, a riskless trade to benefit from a differential in the paper and the physical markets. It's going to be a game-changing product itself. We're highly energized, and we're not going to stop until there is a paradigm shift. And we see basically the ABX and Kinesis system as the new paradigm, the new fair and honest, with all the institutional piping to break the London market, but then going down to the small guy as well and benefiting the small guy.
Well, I think, Chris, now I think we actually owe a great debt of gratitude to Tom. It's one thing to be genius enough to come up with a system like this, but really what I find so, so important is that for somebody to actually then commercialize this amazing idea. A rare person. I have never met anyone in my entire career that was able to see this concept and also then commercialize it. I've looked at it. I'm 1,000% certain that this is a winner. There is nothing here that isn't going to work. It ticks every box, whether it's institutional or the little guy who doesn't even have a bank account in Indonesia. The whole spectrum. And we have to really thank Tom.
We love the idea of a decentralized means for everyday folks who maybe just have access to, you know, the internet through a browser in a local library or iPhone, in a discarded waste bin. This is exciting for the world because there are right now well over 3 billion people without any financial institution access, savings accounts, checking accounts, brokerage accounts, any means to access the financial markets. And it sounds like you may have a tool here that might facilitate that.
Indeed, we do. Actually, there was one thing I didn't mention actually before I quickly mention it. Andy, thank you very much for your words. They're very humbling. Thank you very much, my friend. But we've done a deal with one of the largest mobile banks in the world, which we're very proud of. And this deal basically clears the path ahead for us, so we don't have to worry about banking interference or anything like that, because we've got very, very strong banking partners behind us. And we've been working with this mobile bank in building out their cryptocurrency wallet as well. So this wallet will obviously be able to receive and send not only our cryptocurrency, but also other cryptocurrencies. And some of these other cryptocurrencies will actually be priced in our cryptocurrency, but also in 250 countries around the world for people wanting to send fiat money in and out. It's just a domestic transfer. So we can onboard or offboard fiat money all around the world so efficiently. There'll be a debit card attached to it. In addition to that, there'll be something called a companion card as well, which you can send to your loved ones or whomever around the world, and they can basically just use the card. You can top it up. So it's a very efficient system. It has real-world advantages for everyone who I can look at, whether it be a business who even wants to pay their employees in this currency, an investor, whether it be someone who just wants to utilize the currency. Everywhere I look, it has massive, massive benefits. And please look us up, because we'll have the value proposition for everyone outlined there. This is something, you get all this safe haven store of value benefits of gold, but you can also receive really quite an attractive yield and actually make some money from this thing as well, but actively or passively. So it's pretty exciting stuff, I've got to say.
Look at the People's Bank of China, anywhere from 2 to 3.75% negative yield. Imagine the market in Asia for a project like this. I can only fathom the possibilities here. All right, Andrew McGuire, I'm sure you'd like to wrap things up here with some final comments.
Yeah, as I say, this is the most exciting, as I say to Tom, thanks, no sleep around here. I just cannot, you cannot actually sleep at night when you realize how big this is and what an impact this is going to make. This is going to, physical markets going to run right over this paper market scam. It's going to please so many people, and everyone can be involved with just no bank account, or whether you be a massive institution and you've got a massive depository. You just got that choice, yield or no yield, of course, and with no risk. To me, that's it. This is why I can't sleep at night. When this thing rolls out, and it's going to roll out imminently.
We've been looking for that time when the market finally had an opportunity for crypto to meet the physical, to meet the bullion. Because, we have the old guard, the veterans, just beating up Bitcoin, calling it digital gold. It's drawing attention away from us, from bullion. But I think what you have here is the superhighway to put an end to all of that and bring in the deep pockets. All right, Tom, any final comments today?
So one last thing. I had a great phone call today from a money manager, actually, who I met here in St. Moritz, one of the largest cryptocurrency fund managers in the world. We're conducting a token raise, and we'll be doing like an ICO around this token raise. It's actually basically attached to the revenues. It's our revenue token organization. Initially, we thought this was going to be a big raise, 100 million. We've got verbal confirmation that one party is taking 100 million at least, increasing that now most likely to 200 million. This will actually be publicly launched this week. So you'll see some information going out there this week. Please read our white paper. Please look at the numbers. They're really quite outstanding. Just take the time, and for anyone interested, make myself available. And I know so does Andy, and you'll see our website will endeavor to answer all questions as they come through.
And for American investors, we have to be very careful here. There's a $2,000 limit because of new SEC regulations, and it really hinges upon whether or not this is viewed, of course, as a tradable security or whether it's an underlying utility aspect. So we'll leave that to all the lawyers and the rest of the legal team there. But you say you'll have a webpage where folks can check out your crowd sale, and they'll have an opportunity, if they're KYC eligible, know your client, know your customer.
The website will either be Kinesis, it'll be both kinesismoney.com and kinesis.money.
What we do know, the entire Eastern world, the entire Asian world, no limitations or regulations that prohibit them from investing deeply into this. And of course, if you're an accredited investor, of course, there is no limitation. But I think, as I say, people should check with their own lawyers, with their own tax accountants, especially if you're US-based. But I think globally, there is no such issue.
That's a great point. Now, I'm so glad you brought that up, because in the U.S., accredited investor, at least at last check, was roughly $250,000 income and then $1 million net worth and something along those terms. And I also understand that in China, there have been some recent regulations that have made it very difficult for ICOs. All right, guys, very exciting stuff. Andrew McGuire. We also have Chief Executive Officer Tom here as well. We're going to look forward to following up with you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Nice to see you, Tom.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. In June of 2017, I discussed a story that trended across all media regarding the Harvard commencement speech provided by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. In that speech, he called for people to consider what he says is the need for what is known as universal basic income, also known as UBI. The headlines reported the event by declaring, "Mark Zuckerberg joins Silicon Valley bigwigs in calling for the government to give everybody free money." Well, it's only been 9 months since that commencement speech, and now the mayor of Stockton, California, wants to provide universal basic income for the city's poorest residents. Starting this year, an experimental program called the Stockton Economic Empowerment Demonstration, also known as SEED, will pay $500 a month to several hundred of the city's low-income residents with no strings attached. Stockton's mayor, Michael Tubbs, believes Stockton is ground zero for a lot of the issues that face the nation, including a lack of job opportunities, low wages, and high housing prices, which have been triggered in part by Silicon Valley's explosive growth nearby. An article on MSN.com equated the need for universal basic income with what is presented as the inevitable automation, driven by high-tech companies, that will eradicate even more middle-class jobs. Automation will result from the promise of self-driving cars, ordering kiosks at fast food restaurants, which, by the way, are already being rolled out in some locations, and many other forms of technology that will inevitably replace greater numbers of human beings with automation and robots. Talking about universal basic income cannot be done in isolation, because the very topic itself demands an integration and reconciliation of a variety of issues that overlap and permeate the topic in a way that will change the very fabric of society, business, and politics moving forward. The economy, technology, and demographics are colliding right now. Is UBI a form of socialism, unemployment, or the dole? Merriam-Webster defines the dole as receiving money that a government, especially the British government, gives to people who do not have jobs or who are very poor. The question one might ask is that, is UBI intended to be a permanent form of the dole? What level will it advance to in society? Going forward, do we want to give up the potential of people and their capacity to learn and grow, and simply say technology has won, and some people are now obsolete? It's always easy to start debates like UBI, because they are initially intended to benefit the most vulnerable of people. And who, in good conscience, could be against that? But the ripples and ramifications that flow from UBI come center stage into the hotly contested immigration debate that has captured and in some cases polarized parts of America. Who will be eligible for UBI and under what circumstances? Will UBI be taxed? Will it be paid by mayors and cities? Or will it become a state benefit? Or is the ultimate goal to make it a federal benefit? What will be the financial source of this benefit? Are we going to start taxing the robotic labor and automation provided by technology? How will UBI impact the minimum wage, especially against a backdrop of low wage inflation for many decades? UBI may appear to be a novel or fringe discussion point right now, but make no mistake, its implementation and all the ramifications that will directly result from its existence will change the trajectory of the economy, of education, of immigration, of voting, of business, of taxation, of an individual's identity, and the very soul of humanity going forward. It's a big subject, and it's not going away anytime soon in our lifetimes. With all the displacement and automation that technology promises to bring, one area I'd really like to see displacement is in Congress. Imagine if we no longer had humans as our elected officials. What if each state and congressional district created their own artificial intelligence or AI congressman or senator, utilizing blockchain for transparency, accessible on your smartphone, and programmed with the will of the people from that region? Perhaps we could reduce or eliminate bribes, sexual harassment, and other misdeeds on the part of Congress. Think that's a crazy proposition? Think again. If we're going to test out this brave new world of UBI, let's start from the top down, not the bottom up. If the powers that be really want to automate and eliminate jobs, let's start by eliminating their jobs. And maybe the discussion and ramifications of this far-reaching concept will be looked at more realistically. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.